morning. Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams. When most people get sick, they can turn to health insurance, Medicare, or Medicaid to pay for medical expenses, but thousands of people in New Mexico don't have any kind of health coverage and can't pay for their doctor's visits out of pocket. How do we care for those people when they need help? And what are the barriers to healthcare for them? How do we make sure they get the medical attention they need? Joining us today to talk about those questions are Dr. Bill Wagner, director of Central Savila Clinic in Albuquerque, and Dr. Bill Weiss, formerly a doctor at UNM Hospital and a member of the Bernalillo County Healthcare Task Force, which we'll get to talk a little bit about later. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Ed.
Bill Wagner, let's start. This is a complicated topic, really, and one that I think we could start maybe by laying some groundwork. I mean, when we're talking about people who are medically indigent, who are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about thousands of people in Bernalillo County and statewide, but we're talking about people, some of whom who have had bad luck, have not been able to get a job in this difficult economy and don't have health insurance. Some are people that make more money, the working poor who make more money than they can to qualify for Medicaid. An individual who's working for $14 an hour may have enough money to, pay for their food, but when it comes to health insurance, they may make too much money to actually qualify for Medicaid if they're living alone. So, you know, roughly around $16,000 a year for an individual puts you over the amount that you can make to qualify for Medicaid. Difficulty that a lot of the working poor have is that even with the Affordable Care Act and some of the new insurances that are out there in the marketplace, they have a difficult time paying for everything. And so we have the working poor. We have people that just kind of get bounced around through the system that is not really set up to make it customer friendly. So even if you do have eligibility for things like Medicaid, sometimes it's not the easiest thing in the world to get set up on it. And it can take a while. It requires going to appointments with the income support division or getting online, and there's barriers to that sometimes.
Getting online, I would assume a lot of people in this category might not have internet access, things like that.
Right. And so, what options do they have? They can call in, they can try to do these things, but it does take a certain degree of ability to navigate a system that is not always customer friendly, and a bit of diplomacy sometimes. And if you run into somebody that misunderstands what you're saying, for instance, people that are eligible but maybe have a linguistic barrier. There's a lot of difficulty for people that are Spanish speakers that are actually eligible for these services, and they don't really understand how to get them. So there's a lot of people living in our county who need insurance that don't have it. And the broader idea here that we're talking about is a safety net. And when we talk about a healthcare safety net, you know, you think about a circus and people swinging at their own peril from a trapeze. And if they fall, it's a lot better for the show if they get caught in something that's going to save them from landing on the ground. And we need that in healthcare. And right now, particularly in the area that I work, in behavioral health, we do not have an adequate safety net. People, even when they do have insurance, are unable to get the resources that they need.
Okay. Well, so you're talking about a safety net, and I guess your community clinic and other community clinics in the county and in the state are kind of the de facto safety net in a lot of ways. I mean, would you describe it that way? Tell us what the kind of work that these community clinics do and who they serve.
So I can speak about my clinic. It's called Centro Savila. It's located on Isleta Boulevard in the South Valley. Isleta Boulevard's the main artery of the South Valley, and there's a bus stop right in front of our building. That's intentional. because we want to create access. And the South Valley, despite the fact it's one of the largest geographic areas in terms of the zip code 87105, and it's got one of the larger population bases, has some of the least services for people with health care. And we know that things like transportation are a barrier for a lot of people to get their basic needs met. We know that having something that is local, friendly, inviting, dignified, all helps people to feel that they're, you know, going to be part of a healthcare system where they feel like it's welcoming. And that's what we tried to do when we set up Centro Sávila, is to find a way to make it accessible. And when we're talking about the safety net, we don't want to just think about a hospital as one sort of gigantic entity building that's going to solve all of our healthcare problems. We need to really think about what kind of places people go to get their primary care and their preventative care. We're really thinking about trying to make it affordable, a preventative upstream system that people don't have to wait until they're really sick and, in that case, use the emergency room for their basic health care.
I understand that does happen, though, a lot, Dr. Weiss, and I apologize for mispronouncing your name earlier. Bill Weiss, you've worked on care as a physician for this population, right, for quite a few times, and I'm wondering what some of the challenges are when you're dealing with people who don't have the kind of regular access to medical care that they might need. Does this create a certain vulnerability, a challenge for medical practitioners?
Well, absolutely, yes. I've worked for over 25 years when I was on the faculty at the University of New Mexico in Family and Community Medicine as a primary care physician. and I've also approached this from the point of view of public health. I've worked in the Department of Health, Public Health Division, for several years, a number of years ago. I've looked at it from the point of view of health policy as well, working through the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Center for Health Policy at UNM, and have worked on it from the point of view of what is the county's responsibility, working, for example, with the healthcare task force, which existed for several months to address some of these issues. As a practitioner, there are lots of issues, and as Bill Wagner was just saying, access is part of it. If one starts with a goal that of what we should have, if we can get there, would be access for everybody, in looking at it from the point of view of the county, and recognize that these issues have parallel ramifications statewide. But looking at it from the point of view of Bernalillo County, what would happen if we set up as a goal that everybody should have access to a full complement of services when they need them? And this is just simply doesn't happen. For example, much of primary care shuts down Friday afternoons, opens up Monday morning. Much of primary care functionally shuts down at night. That's not the way illness works. So there are just holes in the system as it is up and running. But then there's the whole issue, do people have financial access, which Bill was just talking about? Is that access available when you need it, even when it's open? We talk about a safety net, but if the safety net, as you're falling towards the safety net in terms of a need, you get a little notice saying, well, you can be caught by this safety net two months from now when Sure. your first appointment is. It doesn't work. It doesn't work in acute medicine. It's bad for chronic disease management. It doesn't work for lots of mental health problems. I'm now working on addiction policy. People who have addiction issues, drug use dependency or disorders, chronic disease, when they're ready for treatment, that's now. It's not 2 months from now. And so that system is just simply not configured right now in an accountable way to meet the need that shows up. And so a lot of people just simply aren't getting the access or the continuity or the communication across parts of the system. And we've done surveys of people who, especially those coming out of low socioeconomic groups of a variety of types, and this is what they can articulate very clearly is the access barriers, and once in, getting the continuity and follow through that they need.
So it's a big, significant problem, and we're talking a little bit about what it looks like in Bernalillo County, but I'd like to zoom out a little bit and take a look at Santa Fe County, because we have Kira Ochoa on the line with us now. She manages the Santa Fe County Healthcare Assistance Program, which includes the Indigent Care Funds. Hi, Kira.
Hi, Ed.
So you've heard a little bit about what things look like in Bernalillo County. What, from your end of the spectrum there in Santa Fe, are you dealing with some of the same issues in terms of indigent populations, people who don't have health coverage and need care?
Yes, we definitely are. There are still some major gaps for people post-ACA, although, of course, things are much, much better for people who now qualify for Medicaid. And, you know, we definitely are seeing people that hadn't received primary care or specialist care for decades coming into the system, and you know, that's very exciting, but we still have gaps for people who can't afford you know, to purchase insurance on the exchange and who are not eligible to purchase because of their immigration status. In Santa Fe County, we do serve through my program people, immigrants who can't purchase insurance. We serve people who don't have insurance, but we do so in a fairly limited way, given the state's safety net care pool program, where a large portion of my fund is transferred to the state and then distributed to local hospitals, and it's on the local hospitals to offer patient assistance, patient financial assistance. And the big gap for people is specialist care when people are out of the system of the hospital, when providers are not part of that system. There's not a lot of way for patients and residents to get access to the things they need in that regard. We're working on that in numerous ways. One is this year we have a healthcare advocate that we've positioned, that we created, and this is somebody to, one, help people navigate the system where our fund may not be able to pay directly. We can at least, you know, get on the phone with somebody and talk to the financial assistance policy at the local hospital and make sure that the person's getting served according to the published policy. And then, you know, we're still looking for national funds that will help people with certain illnesses who need specialist care. But, you know, there's still a lot of people who unfortunately are still falling through the cracks.
You're listening to the KUNM Call-In Show. Have you been without coverage and needed medical help? What did you do? Give us a call. The number is 877-899-5866. You can also send us an email at callinshow@kunm.org or post comments to our webpage at kunm.org. Kira, you said that a lot of people are falling through the cracks. I hear the same thing from you, Bill Wagner, and Bill Weiss. A lot of those people are eligible for Medicaid but aren't enrolled. Is that right? I mean, how many people could be covered by Medicaid but aren't, and why is that?
There are tens of thousands in Bernalillo County. You know, somewhere between 30 and 60,000 people still are without health insurance.
But that could have it if they...
There are at least 30,000 people that many of them, the majority of them, could have this insurance here in Bernalillo County, and they do not have it. And that can be because of outreach and enrollment. People aren't aware of how to get enrolled. It could be that we have a system that kicks people off of their insurance. If you have Medicaid, you get it for a year. And the assumption is that in that year, you will find new insurance or find employment or, you know, get yourself out of a Medicaid insurance. And so people oftentimes have to re-enroll, and because of that process, they lose their coverage if they don't do that. It takes work to maintain Medicaid coverage from the patient's perspective and from the provider's perspective. And in most provider situations, It's not the doctor themselves that's actually saying, hey, do you have health coverage? It's the front gatekeepers that are doing that. And sometimes people get lost in the cracks there. I think that it's essential that we really look at, when we don't have health insurance for everyone, everyone suffers from that because we do pay for it. We pay for it in the emergency room, costs that are much more expensive that people end up using for primary care. We end up with people much sicker and suffering. And so we're really looking for ways to provide upstream prevention.
We're talking about indigent care in New Mexico, what it means to be without health coverage, how we can get help to the people who need it. Joining us in the KUNM studios are Dr. Bill Weiss, physician in Albuquerque and former member of the Bernalillo County Healthcare Task Force. We have just joining us community health worker Claudia Benavides. Hi, Claudia. Welcome. And Bill Wagner, who runs Centro Savila Community Health Center. Santa Fe County Healthcare Assistant Program Manager Kira Ochoa is on the phone with us as well. We're going to take a short break here, and then we'll be back to take some calls.
Support comes from Globalkirky, New Mexico's 12th annual celebration of world music and culture, Friday and Saturday, September 23rd and 24th at the National Hispanic Cultural Center in Albuquerque. Details at globalkirky.org.
Support comes from the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival. Friday, October 14th, opening night gala features The Adderall Diaries, starring James Franco and Ed Harris. Tickets at santafeindependent.com.
The end of season 4 of the TV show Longmire left fans on edge. As the show enters its 5th season this week, we'll take a look at its popularity among the Native American audience. Join us tomorrow as we discuss the portrayals of Native American issues and characters that are key to nearly every episode of the Netflix series. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
This is KUNM 89.9, broadcasting from the University of New Mexico. We're back. We're talking about gaps in healthcare access for low-income and indigent New Mexicans. Did you or someone you know get turned away from a hospital for lack of money or health insurance? Call now with your take. The number is 877-899-5866. You can join the conversation on Twitter, where we're live tweeting the program. Our handle is at KUNM News, and our hashtag is HealthNM. Claudia Benavides, just joining us in the studio. You're a community healthcare worker, right? And some of the work you do is going out into the community and knocking on doors, navigating people through the system. What are some of the things that you hear from the people that you're meeting out in the community?
Good morning. First of all, the lack of understanding from the providers, the lack of knowledge. The lack of knowledge and resources for the poor people from of New Mexico. Everybody thinks that because you work, you make money, you are able to afford $500 copay, and that's not the case. Through the Pathway program, we work with the poor of the poor. Doesn't matter if you work 60 hours a week, you still cannot afford the UNM care, or you just cannot afford to buy independent health care.
And UNM care is a low-cost insurance program, basically, through the hospital, right? Is that right?
Yes.
And a lot of, as I understand it, the immigrant population is a big chunk of these people that aren't able to get the health care they need.
And it's not only the immigrant population, could be you, could be me. If you make $100 more because 1 week you work 60 hours a week, you will not able to afford UNM care. And of course, you cannot buy independent, the exchange insurance. We live in a very poor state, and doesn't matter if you are undocumented. If you have blue eyes and you are U.S. born, doesn't matter.
Well, let's go to the phones. We have Margaret on the line calling from Albuquerque. Hi, Margaret. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm calling. I'm so thankful that you're doing this show because I didn't think that some of these problems that I've experienced are recognized. And now hearing this, I know that they are. And so So I'm somebody who used to, I work very hard. I'm an artist, though. I also have a part-time job. I'm a single parent. So I used to qualify for the UNM care. Obamacare comes along. I no longer qualify for Medicaid. My part-time job doesn't offer insurance, or it's a little bit more than the marketplace. So I have to, you know, buy something on the marketplace. They tell me I can afford $120 a month. I can't, but, you know, you have to do it. So I pay that. It's basically catastrophic. I didn't use it a single time last year for anything because I don't want to pay a copay. This year it went up by $25 a month, even though my income stayed the same. To compound my health cost issues here, my daughter went to college last year. You know, she's a freshman this year. Thank goodness she received a full scholarship. So I thought, you know, that's one less burden for me. Only to find out she has to have health insurance there, which is a good idea. However, her Medicaid doesn't cover her out of state. I can't apply for Medicaid in the state that she's at because she's not a resident yet. So I get stuck with an $1,800 bill to add to my $125 that I pay for insurance here that I never used.
I was going to say, have you needed to use your insurance? Have you needed medical care and had an experience like trying to get it through the coverage that you have?
Well, I've looked at the policy, and really the only thing that I wouldn't have more than 50% copay for is just an annual physical, and I think like a mammogram. And the rest, it's just too expensive. And so my strategy is to not need it. I invest in good food, I exercise, I stay healthy. I would much rather have, you know, the option to invest my money in something like that than having to pay this amount for healthcare that I'm not going to use unless it's a dire emergency.
Right. Well, Margaret, I really appreciate your call. Thanks for sharing your story with us. Dr. Weiss, I see you looking interested at this call. What's your take on this? I mean, it sounds like Margaret isn't necessarily the exception to the case, but maybe the norm in this kind of
situation. Well, that's really a prototypic story. And it reflects a failure of policies nationally, where we have a system of care that by any other worldwide standard is awash in money, but somehow it's not getting the job done. And the system is still nevertheless costly for the individual to come to the table and participate. And what's happened is we have this huge amount of money going in to an extremely expensive system and still not providing the access that works for Margaret, and I think a lot of people like her. The real dilemma for her is that she gives up her insurance at great peril. She may be healthy now. It's a good thing she is, but you never know when she's going to get in an automobile accident or something like that where she's going to need this unexpectedly, and her problems will be just simply compounded. So people need to be insured. The question is, how do we get it so that it's affordable, that people are not going into horrible medical debt when they actually have to pay those bills? And that's just compounds the problem. It is a huge problem. I think her case is absolutely spot on telling of the kind of dilemma that people are facing.
We have another caller on the line. Carol is calling us from Albuquerque with a thought on school-based health centers. Right, Carol?
Yes, well, I appreciate this show a lot. I think people not having access to insurance in our community is really a tragedy. I did want to say that school-based health centers that are comprehensive medical, behavioral, often dental case management services inside of school can be one solution to provide access to that preventive care for students in schools. And currently at many of our UNM-sponsored clinics, we do see a good number of students that do not have insurance, but we can provide them with that preventive care. We can provide them with behavioral. Problem is, just as we've heard on the show, if they're not in a school with those kinds of services, it's hard to access out there, and especially behavioral health services. That system has fallen apart in our community, and we need to build it back up. But more school-based health centers can provide some of that initial access preventive services.
And, of course, there's been some closures of those school-based centers recently, the Department of Health shutting some of those down under budget concerns. But thank you very much, Carol, for that call. If you have thoughts on how we should be getting medical care for people without health coverage, I mean, how should we improve the system? Or should we be looking at an upstream view, maybe some preventative measures that we could fund? Instead, give us a call and let us know. We're curious about what your take is. The number is 877-899-5866. Join the conversation on Twitter. We're live tweeting the program. Our handle is at KUNM News. Well, we've been talking about indigent care in New Mexico generally, but let's turn now to a specific case. UNM Hospital is, as I understand, the biggest provider of indigent care, and the hospital gets over $90 million each year in tax dollars from the county. And some of this money is supposed to pay for care for the very people that we're talking about. This November, the funding's up for renewal. Voters in Bernalillo County will get a chance to decide if they want to keep that money coming. Maybe let's start here talking about UNM Hospital with a little bit of a history of the hospital. Billy Sparks is just joining us in the studio. Billy is a spokesman for UNMH, and thanks for being here, Billy.
Good morning. How are you?
Can you give us a little overview of the history of the hospital? I know there's a kind of a long history in terms of indigent care and the way the hospital was conceived.
Well, UNM Hospital, as you know, began in 1952. It's originally an Indian hospital, and then it became a county hospital. And then when the School of Medicine was founded, as Dr. Weiss knows very well, then the School of Medicine faculty and the physicians associated with the School of Medicine became the managers and physicians for the hospital. So we're very, very proud of that long, long relationship. The people of Bernalillo County really are the ones who made all this possible. We have had tremendous support, tremendous public involvement with the hospital since the very, very beginning, and still do to this day. So you mentioned the mill levy. I want to explain that there's two types of mill levies in New Mexico. One is strictly an indigent mill levy, and that is operable in Sandoval County, and that vote is also coming up this November. And that money does go directly to indigent care and is actually split with the Presbyterian, so it covers all the hospitals in Sandoval County. The Bernalillo County mill levy is a hospital operation fund, which means that the people of Bernalillo and the physicians and faculty and staff that are associated with UNM Hospital, which is over 5,000 people, over 1,000 physicians, by the way, actually receive the support so that we can provide tremendous care with the state's only level one trauma center, with the National Cancer Institute designated comprehensive center.
So what you're saying basically is that $93 million, a little over $90 million a year,
it fluctuates because it's based on the gross receipts of taxes.
It goes to what we call operations and maintenance, but really part of that money is supposed to go for indigent care. So how much within that money do you spend?
Last year, and these are the latest statistics we have, and I checked it on it yesterday, we provided $96 million in uncompensated care, which is what we call indigent care. Between July 1st of 2015 and July 1st of 2016. Before the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, that number actually peaked at about $250-some million worth of uncompensated care. So with the expansion of Medicare and Medicaid, we have seen an influx of people who have some type of coverage in that. But what I was going to say about the Hospital Operations Fund is that out of that money each year, we designate about 15% right off the top for our UNM Psychiatric Center and our addiction treatment programs. We also sponsor a lot of community programs, the Pathways programs, and so that's made possible. But it really, really is all the other hospitals in New Mexico who cannot afford to have a 24/7 trauma center, who cannot afford to have the over 100 oncologists on staff like we have at the Comprehensive Cancer Center, UNM Cancer Center. All that's made possible by the public support, and this has been going on again since 1950. So every 8 years, there's a vote, and the people of Bernalillo County decide to continue that support, and that's coming up again in December.
And I guess we should say that Pathways program you mentioned that's funded through this money, that pays for your clinic, Bill Wagner, right? And or
pays,
not your your clinic, but part of your...
It pays for a navigator, and that's a person like Claudia.
And that's what Claudia does. Yeah. Right, right. So this is a big, it's a big chunk of money, but it's going to a lot of different things. Let's go back to the phones right now. We have Nick on the phone calling from Santa Fe. Hi, Nick. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how's it going?
Very well, thanks. What's on your mind?
So right now I'm in the fortunate position of you know, being able to afford health insurance, but the only reason that is because my employer pays the bulk of it. My premiums are, for my family, I think are over $1,500 a month. And I have been in the position in the past of not being so fortunate. You know, this term indigent care, it's, you know, looking back on those days, it makes me wonder, you know, what even is an indigent? I mean, if I could afford health insurance, that has, you know, like $500 copays and 50 or 60% cost sharing with a maximum annual out of pocket of $8,000 or $12,000 per person in my family, in a catastrophic kind of situation, that, you know, quote unquote health insurance is going to bankrupt me every bit as quickly as not being insured at all. So when you get in that point and you're looking at, am I going to pay, you know, $200, $300, who even knows what it is now, $500 a month for this health insurance, which really wouldn't do anything for me in a catastrophic situation anyway, or do I put that money elsewhere? And I mean, in the past, I had a lot of difficulty justifying to myself, you know, getting health coverage that really isn't going to be that effective when I would need it anyway.
So have you thought about dropping your, I guess your employer pays for it, but, you know, would you consider if you were in another situation, just not paying for your coverage and going instead for the tax penalty that you'd have under the ACA? Would that be a more of a cost savings for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I would look at it, you know, the long-term situation is I'm going to end up negotiating with the providers of care, you know, and they'll take pennies on the dollar. Either that or I'll go bankrupt. You know, the alternative would be just paying these premiums and paying these premiums and then ultimately being in the same point of having to negotiate between bankruptcy or the provider being willing to take pennies on the dollar.
Thanks for your call, Nick. I really appreciate that. And I guess people like Nick that, you know, if he decided not to have insurance, might end up at UNMH getting covered by some of these funds we're just talking about.
Well, the coverage itself, and we do work with all of our patients. You know, our mission is a safety net hospital, the mission that we treat everyone who walks through our doors, regardless of what kind of coverage they have, is central to who or what UNMH has been for the last half century. So I think that's really, really important to understand. And we do work with patients so that we can make sure that they receive the kind of care that they need, because the longer you wait, as again all of our physicians can tell you, without the preventive care, without the tests, if you have a situation, it gets worse, and then it's just bad for everybody. So it's important to you know, find out what's going on first to be able to provide you with a treatment regimen that actually assists you in getting better. And our mission is to reduce suffering and save lives. That's the driving force behind our physicians and our staff.
Of course. Well, Margaret, who just called in, we got a call from another listener who was deeply affected by your situation and wants to help. So, Margaret, if you're still listening, give us a call back. We're taking your calls today about how to get health care when you can't afford it. That's 1-877-899-5866 or email KUNM, or I'm sorry, email callinshow@KUNM.org. Gosh, that one's scrambled. We're going to take a short break here. You're listening to the KUNM Call-In Show live from the University of New Mexico, talking about indigent care, UNM Hospital, barriers to medical care, and we want to hear from you. Have you or someone close to you been without health coverage and needed care you couldn't afford? What's your experience been? Do you have advice to share? Again, that number is 877-899 KUNM, that's 877-899-5866. Send us an email to callinshow@KUNM.org or tweet @KUNM News. We'll be right back after a short break.
Vessel Health and Dr. Harvey White support KUNM. Vessel Health offers personalized evaluations, medical services, and lifestyle solutions focused on prevention and long-term cardiovascular health. Treat the system, not the symptom. VesselNM.com. Want to give KUNM a great 50th anniversary present? How about donating your old car or truck? October is our anniversary month, so if you call now, it will be towed and sold, and we will get the proceeds before October ends. You will get a tax deduction and a KUNM membership, which entitles you to many benefits, including free admission to the Social Justice Fair. It takes just one call to 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
The biggest classical music festival on the planet is the BBC Proms in London. And one of the highlights of the 2016 Proms was a return visit by the Simon Bolivar Orchestra of Venezuela with their charismatic conductor, Gustavo Dudamel. Latin American music from the Proms on the next performance today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams, reporter for Public Health New Mexico, a KUNM reporting project providing in-depth, investigative, and continuous coverage of public health and the impacts of poverty in our state. How should we be funding indigent care? Are we putting our energy in the right place? Give us a ring, 877-899-5866. That's toll-free. Or send us an email at callinshow@kunm.org. You can also post comments to our Facebook page. Now, Dr. Weiss, before we you were wanting to weigh in before the break, but we were talking a little bit about the services that that UNM Hospital provides for indigent care, and I'm wondering what your take is on that. You were part of the Bernalillo County Task Force. You had quite a few recommendations and findings that you looked at. Fill us in.
Sure. I think the callers, people calling in, have made it pretty clear that a lot of people, it's not just the really totally indigent people, it's also people who have jobs, have families, are being hit hard and in unaffordable ways by their present experience and the risks of what happens when they need health care. To me, this speaks of a system that is not functioning well, a system that is inherently extremely expensive. a lot of money goes into the system. It ultimately covers services with a healthcare provider industry that ultimately receives the money that does come in. What is tragic is when the people that, such as some of the callers this morning, end up indigent because of the expenses that they're having to face unavoidably. They're ending up indigent. Medical debt is the largest cause of personal bankruptcy. It puts people into poverty, some people, keeps them there. I think the healthcare task force is distressed about that. No person should be driven into poverty where they are having to make choices between food and paying their medical bills as a result of this system. And they certainly should never be sent to collections unless they're just simply outright people manipulating the system in that point of view. And I think that's probably a very small number. The irony is that poverty itself is a major driver of poor health. And to have the healthcare system driving people into poverty is ironically horrible. So, you know, what do we do about it? Well, we can't solve this problem. But one of the things that I came away with from the healthcare task force is that the kind of thing that UNM might be working on actively, positively, aggressively, is to help us figure out how do we get this system here to work a whole lot better. Right now, it is fragmented. People dip in and out of that system without coherence. Some people are getting good care, of course, but a lot of people are getting very fragmented care and care that does not connect across its parts. There is no reason why the major hospitals in this city and really in New Mexico should not be cooperating on the use of resources as opposed to competing on scarce resources. They need to be working on how can people who need care now get it, even if it's not the best care. If they need care now, let's get care. And we have some examples of that. And I think at UNM, one of the big areas that has been problematic that's trying to get these issues addressed was the waiting list for addiction services in UNM's ASAP clinic, where the waiting list was spectacular and it never seemed to be moving. Well, now that's become a priority, and they're adapting their service to reduce that waiting list. Not only that, but for the people who need services now, there are options for acute emergencies, but there's also options for providing that those people that are trying to put into place options to provide safety for that person while they're in that waiting period. So the person just isn't out on outer space waiting for the phone to ring saying you're off the waiting list. They're trying to figure out ways of connecting those people to services. Not optimal. It'd be great if they could have the full services now, but it's trying to figure out how to make that system work efficiently, affect more effectively, lower cost. And I think one of the things we should be looking to our university for are some of these kinds of solutions at the systems level. As I say, some people are working at it, and there's some very good examples of that. But they're noteworthy because of their isolation. Neurosurgery around the state, Dr. Yunus, has done some really interesting things to get services to people in situations where those services would not otherwise be available when they need them. We have other examples of that.
Well, Billy Sparks, what is the hospital doing to meet some of those needs that you just heard?
Well, I'd like to, you know, once again thank Dr. Weiss for his many, many decades of service and devotion to the people of New Mexico and the people of Bernalillo County. I do want to point out that, as he said, indigent is a term that's used to describe folks without insurance. But in truth, in New Mexico, sometimes I've seen statistics as high as 80% of individuals without health insurance have a job, but the job doesn't provide them employment. So these are typically working folks with families in the community who are struggling to be able to manage their daily lives economically and to provide health care for their family. So we do understand that, and we do work with our patients. One of the things that we've been able to do is to work with the other local hospitals, with Loveless, with Presbyterian, in seeing to it that if you have a highly complex health care condition, UNM, with its specialists, with the kind of services we provide, needs to have you as a patient. If you don't have a highly complex position, you may not need to be at a high acuity center like UNM Hospital is an academic medical center. So we're working with Loveless and Presbyterian to transfer patients back to the local hospitals so they can receive the kind of care. And then Presbyterian, last year we had, you know, well over 800 patients transferred to us that needed that very, very specialized care. He mentioned Dr. Yonas. One of the grants that he received, which has been really, really great, is that he can evaluate a patient remotely that's in Roswell or Hobbs or any city in New Mexico and see if they need to be transported to us, whereas before they were automatically transported. But sometimes, you know, by looking at the films and the x-rays and the MRIs, that you can see what needs to be done, and he's doing that for the entire state right now. So
right.
You know, having that level one trauma center, and
sure.
I really want to emphasize this, if this wasn't here, when these kind of tragedies occurred, when you know, wrecks on 25 or motorcycle accidents downtown or situations with extraordinary emergencies that come up, or if we had any kind of situation like they've had in cities across the country this year, the unfortunate terror situations, UNM is here for that. And mm-hmm. this support allows us to continue offering that kind of service, which the community hospitals can't afford.
That's an important point. But when we're talking about indigent care, a lot of the tension comes from the fact that this money just goes into the general fund, right, for maintenance and operations. And some people feel like there's not enough oversight to see exactly how it's being spent to get help, like, to the people that actually need it that can't pay for it. So how is the how are we going to know how this money is going to be spent within the hospital?
We've been very, very vocal in our commitment to treating everyone who comes through our door. That if you have a situation, you need to come in, you need to work with us, and we will work with you in whatever kind of structure we can create. You know, our goal is never to turn anybody away. It's never to bankrupt a family. You know, we do really work with
that's
them.
All and that's all in great and intention, yeah. But like yeah. In oversight, how are people going to know what they're going to?
Well, obviously, as I said, it peaked right over a little over $250 million a year in uncompensated care. So knowing that we're providing that level of service, and even last year with the ACA, it was $96 million. I think that's important for people to know.
I see everyone wanting to weigh in, but let's get to a couple phone calls first because we don't want to keep our callers waiting too long. Lucia from Albuquerque is on the phone with us right now. Is it Lucia or Lucia?
Lucia.
Lucia. Thanks for calling, Lucia. What's on your mind?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I'm a little concerned because I want to know what about charging children for medical care. Children don't earn money. They don't have jobs. In some instance, the family can pay, but the majority of family cannot pay for children medical care. Mm. So, and then the second thing I'm concerned about is in many cases, the patient is not well or is a bit too sick to drive to a clinic, and I feel that a doctor or a registered nurse should make home visits for the people who are not in an emergency situation.
Well, thanks for your call, Lucia. But that's kind of exactly what you do, isn't it, Claudia?
Yes, yes, that's exactly what we do. I just want to talk about a little bit about what the person from UNM,
Bill,
was saying. That is true. UNM offer a wonderful service. Most of our clients use UNM as well as Presbyterian and Loveless. I don't think that is the issue anymore because we do know what UNM offer. Sometimes I want to go to UNM. The problem is that is wonderful people like Dr. Kaufman that is really trying, is the vice chair from the school. They are trying really hard, I'm pretty sure, as well as you, to make this work for everyone. Right now, I think our state is suffering. This is a public health matter. We are getting sick. We're getting very unhealthy. It's very expensive. And I think with extremely good intentions, we are not going nowhere because we are not really addressing the issue of it's a lot of money. But people like me and you and most of our New Mexican constituents are getting in debt because the system is so broke down that it's impossible to reach the wonderful doctors at UNM. The waiting lists are up to 9 months to see a PCP. Was wonderful when we enroll 75,000 people for the last couple of years. To do what? To wait 9 to 10 months to be seen by a doctor? This is a matter of we need to be in high alert. People are dying. People are getting sick. And it's a system problem. When you break down behavioral health, addiction, nutrition, diabetes, the families that we see, they're not only the poorest of the poor. It's just people that are working and cannot afford to wait 10 months to see who.
One of those problems, if I could just jump in for 1 second, is as the School of Medicine trains, as we have a teaching hospital, with the expansion of Medicaid, there's a tremendous demand for folks who finally have some coverage, and again, that's a very systemic issue. But we have to really continue to train physicians. You know, we have an aging physician corps in New Mexico. So we have a terrible confluence of more people needing care, and as you say, a primary care physician who doesn't open up their practice to new patients. And that is a huge problem, and we are trying to work with that. And Dr. Coffin, who's the Vice Chancellor for Family Medicine, has created a HERO program, which is a health extension rural office, so we have people in the community working on prevention, trying to get people into medical home and to be proactive on the disparity issue, which is, as Dr. Weiss aptly pointed out, poverty creates bad health. And with that bad health, we have more need. And if we don't treat everybody as they're growing up, then later on in life, then it becomes more tragic. But you're exactly right. And that's just something that by having a teaching hospital here, training physicians, training pharmacists, training nurses, you know, we have 480 residents in the hospital. The average hospital has 4 or 5. So, you know, we do very much appreciate the fact that we've got to have more people out there able to treat everybody.
Bill Wagner.
So, you know, I think one of the things that people in Bernalillo County that pay their taxes need to understand is that the Bernalillo County Hospital is the public health hospital, is UNMH. And it was founded really to not discriminate against anyone. It's really got a really proud history. You know, in 1952, it preceded the Civil Rights Act by 12 years of not discriminating. It did discriminate against one group, and it was people who could afford their health care other places. Mm-hmm. It was set up to be the safety net. It was set up to be the hospital that cared for people that couldn't go nowhere else. And we still need to, you know, have that in Bernalillo County. Taxpayers that can't afford health coverage need somewhere to go. It can be the hospital, and they do serve many of those people. We just want to make sure they're maximizing the dollars that we're paying to go to the people that need it the most. And that is part of the whole public health mentality, and that's how Albuquerque was built. It was built around tuberculosis. It was right. built around the idea that if there's an infectious disease, if we don't prevent it early, it hurts everyone.
We're running short on time, but I do want to get to Lisa, who's on the phone with us from Albuquerque. Lisa, hi. Thanks for calling. Really quickly, tell us what's on your mind right now.
I just wanted to quickly point out, kind of backtracking a bit to Margaret's call earlier, that I have UNM care, and however, that's not seen as health insurance. And so because I had to also not only have UNM care, but also I have to be in the marketplace, because if I'm not, I will be, you know, taxed towards the end of the year. So because of the marketplace insurance, as everyone else pointed out, the deductibles, co-pays are very high, UNM care comes in and kicks in for me at their co-pays. But really, in a sense, I'm paying $200 and some odd a month to have UNM care because it's just more affordable. And while it's out there, and I'm super appreciative that UNM care is there to tell others that you can still, as a backup plan, go to UNM care, but you still have to also be in the marketplace. And it feels like...
Yeah, thanks for that, Lisa. We're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time. And I should point out before we close that the hospital and the county are working on a memorandum of understanding and agreement so to see about how indigent care is going to be funded. Stay tuned to KUNM for coverage of that issue. Thanks to our guests, Dr. Bill Weiss, Dr. Bill Wagner of Centro Savila, community health worker and PB&J program director Claudia Benavides, Kira Ochoa of Santa Fe County was on the phone earlier in the program, and Billy Sparks of UNM Hospital. If you missed part of this program or want to hear it again, you can find it and past episodes on our website, KUNM.org. We're also podcasting the show on iTunes. Marino Spencer engineers the show. Stephen Emmons and Kavi Mobahead managed our phones today. Anna Landy was live tweeting the show, and Sarah Trujillo assisted with production. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and the Commonwealth Health Foundation, as well as the McCune Charitable Foundation. Find out more online at publichealthnm.org. I'm Ed Williams. Thanks for listening.